Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
My first guest is one of the great Irish fiddle players of all time, a founding member of Alton and a leading voice and educator in Irish music. Mairéadh Mhaoiney, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And you had a wild early start this morning flying in from Donegal. How was the weather up there?
Donegal. Oh, we have a different climate up there. It is cold, but no snow yet.
Yeah, I know. I always think of that terrifying but beautiful flight in.
It's the most scenic landing in the world.
Yeah, it is absolutely stunning. Now, we're going to get stuck in. Your first song today is The Spirit of Wine by John O'Doherty, is of course one of Donegal's great fiddle players. What inspired this first choice?
Well, I was brought up by a fiddle player. My father was a fiddle player and my mum was a dancer, and that's how they met. So Donegal's, you know, synonymous with fiddle playing and a certain style. Mm-hmm. And one of the most iconic fiddlers was John Doherty. And the reason I chose him is, you know, he's everything to do with fiddle music. You know, he was a folk fiddle player, but he was also very, very able to go up positions and play flat keys, and he had fantastic, you know, self-taught, just fantastic technical ability as well.
What age were you when you first met him?
I think I was around 12. I went to the doctor's house in Carrick in southwest Donegal, and he came in with this cap, and there was this reverence, you know, as soon as he came in, everyone stopped talking, you know. And this man was a travelling tinsmith. So he was one of these bards, you know, from the medieval...
The great bardic tradition.
You know, from medieval times. And people still looked up to him. And as soon as he drew the bow on the strings, silence everywhere. And the first tune he played was, I asked him, what was that reel? And he said, that's Mooney's reel. So, you know, again, totally a great entertainer, you know, bringing me in as a young musician, you know, trying to impress me, you know. So I was very impressed.
You grew up in Donegal and obviously into a hugely musical family. Did you play it by ear, or did you try and learn to read music? You know, what way did you, you know...
Well, I played by ear. My father taught he was teaching me how to read music, but I already would have heard the tune. So I was playing away like Gudo, and he'd say, God, you learned that very fast. You know? Yeah. But I was learning by ear. But in a way now, I'm trying to regress a bit and try and learn how to read music as well, because I think it's a great ability to have. But to learn music by ear is very important as well, especially traditional Irish music, because it gives you more fluency in the tunes and with the ornamentation and all of that.
It's like Shannon singing it. Yes. Sing nearly to learn. That.
Yes.
You just mentioned earlier just about, you know, Donegal and kind of being very, very distinctive. What is so distinctive, do you think, about the Donegal, you know, fiddle tradition? You know, in language we have different dialects. Mm-hmm. Is it the same?
It's like a dialect, and within Donegal itself there would be different dialects, you know, of the music. It's just people loved the music. We were cut off a lot by the Derryvay Mountains and, you know, and even politically, you know, the north kind of cut Donegal off. Our little link was through Leitrim. So, you know, there was this isolation as well of Donegal, and not a lot of transport there. And it meant that it kept a certain tradition alive there, very strong tradition, and the older tunes and you know, a dialect, we'll say, and even a vocabulary. What I mean by that is our tunes were different as well to the rest of Ireland, which gives Ireland, you know, we have so many different colours in Ireland as regards music. We're so lucky for such a small island.
And what were your parents like? I mean, obviously your dad and mum were so influential for you and your siblings, but, like, I mean, were they... Did they sort of not impose music on it, but were you encouraged to it, or was it just something, you know, what kind of parents were they?
Well, my dad, there was music in the house all the time. My father played the fiddle. My mother was a dancer. That, like, her house was the Cayley house. That's how they met. They encouraged us to sing and play. And my father wrote plays, you know, for the local Aisteri Gidor, and pantomimes based on Balor of the Evil Eye and local mythological figures like that, Thurla Ogmak Sivne. And every Christmas there was this kind of big, you know, extravagant pantomime happening or drama. And there was always that happening in the house and people coming in spouting poetry, you know, and I thought this was
normal,
you know, people just coming in, you know.
So it was a very creative house. It wasn't a very traditional house.
No, yeah, just fun and loads of musicians coming to stay with us and, you know, trying to find beds for them, you know, at 5 a.m. And, you know, there was always fun. It was always fun. And I feel very privileged that Francie and Kitty's still alive. Kitty's 97. Going on 21. She's fantastic. And my father was always very youthful in his attitude. Loved children. He was a teacher as well. And he loved children and loved being with young people.
Well, I suppose I better get to your first choice. Yeah. Finally, I forgot all about it. This is The Spirit of Wine by John O'Doherty. Absolutely sublime there. Mairead, I wanted to ask you about your relationship with the Irish language. I have a very strong memory of being packed off to Gweedore and ran a fast as a young teenager.
I hope you enjoyed it.
We did indeed, but kind of then when it came to university in Dublin, it was just like people are like, they don't speak the same Irish.
Yes.
How do you feel about how, you know, even your own relationship with the language has evolved, and also how others' relationship, you know, with the language, like you see what Irish and music acts such as Kneecap are doing, which for some is too disruptive, and for others who are embracing it, do you?
I love what they're catapulting it into the now, you know. That's how it's a living language, you know, and people are able to enjoy it, and like it is very entertaining what they do. And I've seen them develop over the years, you know. They used to be at the Cabaret Crackalch in Hudibug's Bar with the late and great Ronan Mockiwee. He encouraged them. And when you see them doing so well now internationally, and it says
BAFTA,
a lot of...
long list for the Oscars.
And the Oscars and all that. And, you know, the language is important. I feel in Ireland that
Sometimes too sacred about the language.
It's just sometimes it's put into a vacuum. And if it's not let breathe, you know, if you don't let a language develop and let it breathe. Like I was talking the other night to friends of mine saying the conditional tense in English sometimes, you know, using an English word. So if I whitewashed the house, the whitewash a la hancha, you know, but I mean, they just fell about. How can you make that out, you know? I think a lot of the Gaeltacht people speak like that, you know. We put in English words here and there and we don't even know we're doing it, but we're still conversing in the Irish language, and it should be let breathe, and people shouldn't be too precious about it. And
so you can curse away Oscar if you like.
Curse and, you know, pray and whatever you want to do. I think it's the way, when I was a teacher, I remember the kids, the curriculum was so kind of archaic, so I used to draw pictures and tell jokes to the kids, you know, and they said, "Teacher, we didn't realise we were allowed to laugh in Irish." And I said, "How did you think we were brought up?"
What's the secret to reviving it? Yeah, particularly for the younger generations who do seem to be embracing it.
Yes, well, I think it's it used to be too much associated with poverty and immigration, if you were brought up in the West, on the West Coast, you had to emigrate because there was no work for people there. And people then decided to forget their background. While nowadays, people, especially with all the Gael Scholes here, especially in the urban areas, we'll say Belfast, Derry, Dublin, Cork, Galway, they're just the most vibrant.
And they're amongst the most sought after as well. Now, I want to get on to your second choice of music because you and I could be chatting here
until tomorrow.
This is a music section. I thought everything was going to be all traditional Irish, but you have quite a broad and eclectic taste. David Bowie, your next choice is Starman.
Yes, my brother was very influential in informing me of, you know, what was happening musically. And like we'd be playing traditional music, but we'd also be listening to what's happening in contemporary music. And he brought the Ziggy Stardust, the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. And I just thought it was just so creative at the time and full of hope. And it was post hippie era.
And first man went to the moon.
Yeah, and people going to the moon, looking up to the stars for what's happening up here.
It is a timeless, timeless track. This is Mairead Ní Mhaoine's second choice of music, David Bowie with Starman.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh. Then the loud sound that seemed to fade came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy cosmic time. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow out.
And
great.
Our listeners can't see, but you're boogieing away in your seat there. What role did your brother have, or indeed others, in widening your musical taste?
Well, you see, it was very difficult to find these contemporary LPs at the time. And they would import them from England and wherever they could. Like, it's so easy to find music nowadays. You just go online and you find everything. But this was so hard. So everything was so precious. So you'd go to people's houses with your LPs and you'd play them your LPs and they'd play. So garage was very, very important in my musical information of what was happening, you know, contemporary-wise. And, you know, everything from Rory Gallagher to Lindisfarne to Steel Eye Span and everything else as well. And that was always parallel to us doing our Gaelic songs and, you know, reels and jigs and Highlands and mazurkas. And it was all part of our lives. And we'd be talking about David Bowie in Irish, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so like, that's very important to keep everything.
To have a very, very open mind.
Yes.
In respect of music, let's talk about Alton, because at the time when you set it up, was that to kind of to keep what you were saying about that distinctive sort of traditional music alive, or what was sort of the thinking behind it?
Well, the reason we set up Alton was to travel. That we saw an opportunity to travel.
Get out of Dodge.
I know, yeah. So we went to, like, we were teaching, myself and my late husband, Frankie Kennedy, we were teaching in Malahide, and the Irish government brought in this new thing, Department of Education said you could take a year off try something else because there were too many teachers. I'd say it's the opposite now.
Come back.
But so we took the year, and you could do this for 3 years and then you'd have to make up your mind. So we decided to try it out, as we had just made an album with Gaelin Ciolodui, whom the great Enya Brennan joined us on that album. But we did that and we went to America, got a few gigs, came back, realised that there was an opening and tried the following year. And yeah, then the headmaster, poor Tony Healy, he'd ring us up at the end of every year. Well, are you coming back this year? No, we're going to try another year.
And that was that. Can we talk about Frankie? Because you met him when you were very young. Was it love at first sight?
Oh, definitely. He came into Hudie Bugs and I just said, I'm going to marry that man. I was only 15. I mean, where was my head?
But you did.
I was very, very taken by him. And obviously something between him and I. And he didn't play music then. But somebody, one of his friends told him, well, if you want to go out with that wee Mooney girl, you better learn a whistle or something.
And he did.
He did. And he was a fantastic musician, very fine musician. He was into finesse, something. I learned so much from him as well, because, you know, I was already playing and he thought he was learning from me, but I was equally learning as much from him, you know.
Things you do for love. Taking up an instrument is definitely well up there. You were widowed so young, though. You were so young. Had you even reached 30? Were you in your early 30s?
I was 34. Frankie passed away. And it was, you know, what can you say? I felt I didn't want to see him in pain again. So I felt good for him, but I felt very alone. Yeah.
And he wanted you during his illness few days. Keep going to keep.
Oh, he was
the
such
show
a brave man. You know, he'd go. Well, you better keep the band going because when I get well, you know, we're going to be. And so, you know, that was his excuse for me to go out there and keep the band going. And I mean, the band were going through the loss as well, and they were fantastic help to me. And we had very good friends who kind of kept us going. And
did the music keep you going?
Yeah, the music was an incredible language for we say words that you don't have a vocabulary for, you know. So the music had all the depth and all the sadness, all the colours you needed for expression, I think.
And cancer obviously touched your family again too.
Just
this
recently.
Year. Yeah. Talk to us about your sister. Your sister Anne was in her own right a legendary artist and singer.
She's great. She was a great singer. She was the musician in the house because I'd be learning a tune and, you know, I'd go over it 100 times. And next thing she says, well, I know that one now, without her holding an instrument. And we'd go to the session that night and she'd played with me. And I said, how did you learn? Well, you played it so often today, it's in my head, she'd say. So she was a really natural musician, you know.
And how are you doing now?
It's hard. I found Christmas very hard now. But she's always with me and, you know, for heaven's sake, Mairead, grow up. You know? But, you know, I do have that philosophy since Frankie passed away. We're all going to die. It's only a matter of time. And again, it was watching her in pain. I didn't like that. And I have to really thank the hospice, Donegal Hospice, for being so good to her and so kind. And, you know, she had a great team helping her, but, you know, we just knew she had to go. And she was a great PA worker as well on films and worked with a lot of people here in RTE, you know. Great organiser. I wish I had her skills. She was so organised. I'm totally opposite. And
what you've dealt with by any stretch, look, those big life's losses, as you say, sometimes we just don't have the words for.
We don't have any words for. It's strange. You know, life teaches us to, I think we're here to learn how to cope with these things, and you have to kind of cope with them as well as you can.
And what would your advice be? Because I know there will be many, many listeners who, especially this Christmas, have been affected by bereavement or loss. Well, we can't avoid it, but...
We can't avoid it. It's going to knock at everyone's door. What you do is you live your life the best for those people after they leave, because they would be so annoyed if you went under, you know. I went out New Year's Eve. I cried my eyes out, but I had a blast. Yeah. We were playing music. We sang Glanthan Loskidor. All our loved ones were with us, you know. Mm. And I think that's what you have to do, because we're all going to go the same. Yeah. You know, so you have to just live life to the full, enjoy yourself and give love, you know.
Anne's daughter was called Rosha.
She's staying with me in Donegal at the moment.
And I know that this next song that you've chosen is sung by a Donegal woman, Rosha Rua. What is it and why has it such meaning for you?
Well, I remember Cathal Gone, who worked in this building, he sent me, he told me about Rosha Rua, and he made this great compilation of her songs. And I never had the privilege of meeting Rosha Rua, but I felt so close to her because all her songs were so different. And, you know, if you look at where I come from, Donegal, like the Bothy Band, Clonid, Enya, you know, they were all going to the same well, getting these tunes. And then Rosha Rua arrived and she had a lot of different songs from that well that I was able to tune into. And I really would have loved to have met her because there's all these pictures of her with a little pipe, you know, a doojin. Yeah. And, you know, she was the coolest looking woman, you know.
What is the song you've chosen by her?
Oh, Listal Mela Sergeant. I think it's an anti-war song, really. I enlisted with a sergeant and it's about this young fella who he looks at the army and sees how well they're dressed and all these lovely ladies that follow them around. And when he actually goes into the army, he realises, I really want to be back in County Mayo, he says.
Well, it is Listal Mela Sergeant and it's sung by Rosha Rua. Let's have a little listen.
Listal Mela Sergeant, my hiracha gus mavron. Om Alashar Selim Lavina Ogun Hill, where Magon is as the Gusclebi Gerabon, Agasil Mahin Garvarshan, Nakom the Wheel.
There's Sean Nose and then there's that, you can hear her wee cough there, yeah. Obviously the
You know, that's a field recording that was taken by Prunchus O'Conlon, I think, back in the 50s. And you know,
it's incredible to listen to those archives. And
I love those.
We're in debt to those people who went and collected all of those archives.
Well, in fairness, I could have done the whole five pieces with archival stuff, but I like a mixed thing. But the thing with those kind of recordings is you find these people who have kept these archaic songs alive, and when they weren't that popular at all, you know, and for people like me going researching them, and they're like little sweeties, you know, in the shop, little sweetie shop.
There's quite a number of texts coming in for you. One says, great to hear such a great Irish woman, Gurmaya, Mairead, that's from Seamus. And then Sarah says, I absolutely love Mairead, and love is capped in big capital letters, which is absolutely
so nice.
Lovely. You mentioned the Bothy Band, that is going to be your next choice.
Oh yeah.
Green Grows Flowers of the Red Hill. Why did you choose this one?
Well, I knew a lot of them, like Micheál O'Donnell, the great Micheál O'Donnell, who passed away a few years ago. And I know Trina, I play with Trina, Trina and O'Donnell. They were from Scarabray. And then they combined with Donal Lunny, who has a Donegal connection as well. His mammy's from Ranafarshte. And then, of course, all the people they played with, it was like the super band that we all wanted to happen, you know, Paddy Keenan, Matt Malloy, Tommy Peebles, and Paddy Glacken was with them as well, and Kevin Burke. And it was just, make the hair stand on your back.
And what's amazing actually about the traditional Irish music community is just the extent of collaborations you're all involved in, just forming these like super groups everywhere you go. How
well,
many are you involved
in? They were really so exciting. They just blew my head, you know. It was just, and it was
a rivalry between them? Like, you know, as you say, everybody's going to the same well. Was there any kind of rivalry when you were all kind of setting out, or was there enough for everyone?
I don't think so. I always looked up to these people. Like, you know, they were all my, you know, icons. And, you know, along with the Bothy Band, you had the Dannon, who had a more acoustic-y sound. So, like, you had, well, I mean, they were both acoustic, but you had this rock and roll backing happening with the Bothy Band, and with great taste, done with great taste.
Well, this is the Bothy Band with Green Groves, Flowers of Red Hill.
Thank you.
just grinning here, Maria. There's a text from a listener who says, good morning, I just love listening to the brilliant Maria from Alton, great Donegal woman. Any chance she would go for Uachtarán na hÉireann?
Which would that must be, it must be April Fool's.
Well, there's plenty of names being put forward, Maria. Now, we'll have to capture that response now. Can I ask you about, not about the presidency just yet, we might have to be back for that. Can I ask you about your process? Because all artists, whether it is writers, composers, you know, poets, mm-hmm. whatever it is, sort of have a process. So do you, like, how often are you composing and do you get the equivalent of writer's block in music?
I don't take it very seriously. So there's always
a bit like the presidency.
Yeah, there's always tunes coming into my head, and sometimes I'm out walking and it might be a prayer and then it's a song, and you know, and then it might be just a tune coming into my head. So, you know, I think the creative process is real, it happens. It's not a thing you force.
Like, would you come home from a walk and like sit down and if not quite write it out, just
Put it into my phone. Phones are great for that. Somebody asked me, you know, what's the most inspiring thing to create? And I said, a phone call saying, will you write a tune for tomorrow evening? You know, and then I'm able to write.
Okay, so under pressure for a big deadline.
Yeah, under pressure is very good for a creative person, I think.
What's really striking listening to you, and as you say, perhaps informed by the griefs that you've had, but you really do seem to just live in the moment.
Well, I try to do that, but I'm the most disorganized person in the whole world, but I try and be organized too. You know, I have to make lists every morning, do this, do that, and make sure you have this done. And, you know, so when I go by my list and that's written down, you know, I'm very old-fashioned.
What percentage of the list do you get through every day?
So I have to do my list. But outside that, I try and be there for my family and for my daughter, who's the most important person in my life. And it's just, you know, trying, the process of living is hard enough. So live with a bit of lightness rather than, you know, the cup is half full or half empty, you know.
You never went back to school in a formal sense because you were too busy running around the road. But you still do teach, of course. And teaching online, how does that work?
Well, I love teaching. Once a teacher, always a teacher. I love the challenge of teaching. And I always love the challenge of teaching people that have problems learning, because I was exactly like that. And all you have to do is to get that communication going with, you know, when I go into a classroom, if I'm teaching fiddle, for instance, you know, I'd always go for the person who has the biggest problem, because the rest are going to learn anyway, you know. So that's where you start, and then bring the middle.
Because so many children can not proceed because they don't have the confidence or they
don't
think
they have it. Yes, and they seem to fall. You know, if you don't have that kind of teaching capability, you don't see those people because they're the ones trying to stay quiet.
Well, one of our listeners is Mariosa, who is sitting with her small child at her feet, hoping that she can pass on the Irish music to him. She says, listening to Mairead makes my heart warm. Strangers, you will never know how much you have influence on me and others like me, which is just a beautiful,
so lovely,
beautiful sentiment. It is hard to believe. 40 years for Alton, you've got a...
Yeah, this year. Year, this 2025.
Big tour. Yes.
40 years. We were children when we started.
And where are you gigging?
I'm doing a transatlantic women's concert on the 25th of January as part of Tradfest. So
Icelandic women, Irish women,
women, string sisters, and we have the great Maura Collins coming over from Nashville. We have Maura Nicaoli, great friend of mine, Julie Fowlis from Scotland, and Edwina Gwickin from County Leitrim. Then I'm actually collaborating with the great Paula Meehan in Bundoran on the 1st of February, and then on the 2nd of February Alton play Ivra in Uvraha. I know it in Irish, but I don't know the English for it. Uvraha, down at Feilin the Bridge again, County Kerry. And then
it's on the peninsula.
Yes, it is. And then we head to America for 5 weeks, and come back to the Baltimore Fiddles fiddle festival, and we played the Lark in, and I think we're actually
I think Frankie would not be able to complain that you haven't kept the show.
Well,
on the
show's
road
on,
and you're
show,
still,
yeah. And if you see Alta, please come up and say hello to us.
Well, just before we go to your last track, Maria says, "What a beautiful interview and a beautiful person inside and out, and what a fantastic representation for us Irish." That was from Maria. Kevin says, "Lovely to hear Maria so close to Nollag na Mon," and another listener says, "Such a beautiful, life-affirming interview to herald the new year," which of course it is. We're going to get to your final choice. It's a song dedicated to the late, great Sinead O'Connor.
Yes.
And there are many, many recordings of The Parting Glass.
Yes.
But which version have you chosen?
I've chosen this version. Like years ago, around Christmas time, we used to go and listen to the Voice Squad in Slattery's in Capel Street just before Christmas, and they always sang in harmony. And one of their songs was The Parting Glass. And now it's become very, very popular with loads of people recording it. But when I heard this, it blew my mind because, well, it's a collaboration between Ye Vagabonds and Boy Genius. And Ye Vagabonds are people that I know very well, Brian and Dermot McGlynn, because their mammy's from Donegal, Arnmore. And then Boy Genius, my daughter is a huge fan of Boy Genius. And when this collaboration happened, and all the proceeds for this, I think, went to the Aisleen Project, which was, you know, Sinead's big, all her work, she wanted it to go there. So, I just love this version. I think it's the most poignant version
it
of all.
It is absolutely stunning. And I actually have to say, Maria, I can't even see my screen because there's so many messages of goodwill coming in to you. We'll have to share them with you afterwards. Maria Nguyen, thank you so much for coming in this morning. This is Maria's final choice. It is The Parting Glass, sung by Boy Genius and Ye Vagabonds.
Of all the comrades that I've had, they are sorry for my going away. And of all the sweethearts that e'er I've had, would wish me one more day to stay. But since it falls unto my
good night and joy.